Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday,
1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to you with your host, Venger Satanus, and the Beast.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. It's obviously Saturday. I'm T.C. Downey, and this is my co-host, Venger. Venger, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Today, we've actually got a really, hopefully, a fantastic show for you. We've got a very special guest, Cora Sahn. She's already on the line. How you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Now, today's topic should be relatively extremely interesting. In the 60s, a guy named Von Daniken.
Von Daniken, that's the man.
Von Daniken started speculating that, some certain artifacts of ancient history suggested that we had been visited by aliens, and that was in fact who we deified and made our gods. And so that's today's topic, the Chariot of Gods. Now, I guess I didn't have a really great intro planned here, so you guys will have to help me out a little bit, but
apparently.
intro fail.
epic fail. There was one thing I wanted to interject. That's the Chariots of the Gods is referenced in, probably, if someone put a gun to my head, my favorite all-time movie, and that is The Thing, directed by John Carpenter, starring Kurt Russell and a bunch of other people. The stoner guy, this is kind of early on in the movie, like I think just when things are getting good, someone talks about like weird stuff or like aliens or something, and he's like, Chariots of the Gods, man, they taught the Aztecs everything they know, or I don't know, something like that. And so that was probably my first exposure to that, because I saw The Thing way early on, probably when I was like 10 or 11 or something.
Well, I remember when they were doing all the Chariots of the Gods hyped on television, and a bunch of people had rented the movie, and they're like, you got to see it. And then I saw it, and I had read a book earlier than that called Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock, which bites on Daniken's theories. And I wasn't really impressed with the theories that aliens created all this great technology. I think it downplays human invention.
Yeah, and a lot of people rip on Daniken and other people like that, like their scholarship, I guess, and their their fact getting and their objectivity. Some of the theories are a little out there, and they don't have a lot of proof, and then sometimes they just print the stuff as if it was fact, and it kind of hurts the credibility of that whole movement, I guess. However, on the other hand, even though there isn't a lot of proof or a lot of facts and objective science on this, I believe that is the case, that there are other, alien beings, and not necessarily like gods or godlike beings or necessarily anything mythos related, although possibly, but you know, some sort of visitation from other life forms and other planets, and, you know, that would explain some things, you know, some of the technologies that we've gotten and the help we've gotten and, you know, the, like the pyramids, and there are some things that can't be explained, like why they line up exactly with, you know, certain stars and certain, I don't know, and the whole, like landing strips in South America, you know.
Well, there's
alien
things. There's a lot of artifacts that can't be explained, and, you know, we find all these things, and we're amazed by them, and so we automatically, because we can't explain it, we attribute it to some extraterrestrial being that gave us the insight and the invention, and like I said, I think it just downplays human imagination, and, I mean, what did people do in prehistoric times? They looked up at the sky. You know, we can also remember that a lot of these things were probably visible by the naked eye back then, and they're not now. So building the pyramids, you know, according to, you know, the Orion Belt, you know, it's not so inconceivable to think, well, hey, maybe they could see it, and they say, hey, let's put them here.
That's true. I mean, it's not outside the realm of possibility that that human beings, you know, did everything themselves. But it would be a convenient stretch, I guess, to think that that some different civilizations at certain periods had assistance from, I don't know, from aliens and stuff. Well, what's your opinion on that, Beast? You one way or another? Or?
Actually, I'm kind of drawn between both sides of it. I mean, obviously, we don't want to downplay the capability of human imagination, because obviously, if we can conceive the notion, we can figure a way to construct it and make it happen. And that's proven historically time and time again. You know, in the 1800s, they were, telling stories about people being able to fly, and by the 1900s, we were, in fact, able to fly.
Right.
So,
and in World War II, there were, you know, airplanes were coming to these primitive areas and bringing supplies, and these tribes that had never seen an airplane before, they conceived them as gods, because what did they do? They came out of the sky in these big contraptions they never saw, and they brought them things. They brought them food. They brought them all kinds of things that made their life a lot easier. And then when they no longer needed to be there, they left. And then after they left, they were building effigies of these airplanes and worshiping them as gods.
Well, that leads me to my next point, and that's like a beautiful parallel between that and stories like in the Bible and in other, you know, biblical ancient religious writing and other civilizations from the past. You know, there's a lot of that going around, I guess. A lot of the Bible stories, or, you know, maybe ancient scrolls from Sumeria or something, you know, the Mayans or the Aztecs, do you think that's what they're talking about when they're talking about the gods visiting and, you know, chariots of fire and, you know, gods.
Yeah, but you're also talking about a civilization of people that made sacrifices by the thousands, if not millions, because they didn't believe that the sun would rise again if they didn't. You know, they were making all these sacrifices to bring the sun back. You know, when the sun went down every night, they had no guarantee that sun wasn't going to rise again in the morning if they didn't make blood sacrifice.
Right, but that doesn't really discount the potential for there actually having been alien, and I want to use the term alien rather than extraterrestrial, because, you know, it could well be, you know, that they weren't actually traveling to us from a different planet in space, but rather, you know, just a different dimension, and, you know, coming across in that way, and so... You know, alien just being foreign to us.
I won't say it's not possible. It's certainly possible. Anything's possible.
I would say that the facts that line up that make me think that there's a good indication that we have, in fact, been visited. is that it's all about the same time frame throughout all of different religious and archaeological history. All about the same time frame. All of these different ancient civilizations all have developed this you know sky god, this you know chariot of fire coming in and you know landing here and sharing and teaching man. I mean, it's as evident as the story of the serpent tempting Eve with the apple of knowledge. Mm-hmm. You know.
But the serpent itself has represented knowledge for a lot of civilizations.
Well, and that's exactly why, you have to stop and think about these things and look at them in the aspect of, you know, if they all have an equal representation and they all appeared at the same time, is there something more than just the obvious?
Right. Well, yeah, perhaps the knowledge of the serpents. Perhaps the ideas that might have been, I don't know, provided or explained or shown to primitive peoples got wrapped up with, you know, how the aliens look. And, you got like the serpent of the Garden of Eden. And you got all the weird half animal, half people representational gods from ancient Egypt. And, you know, you got all the weird, crazy shit that goes on in the Bible with, you know, the Cyclops and all the other, you know, stuff. And then, of course, you have H.P. Lovecraft, and you got, you know, the serpent people and stuff like that. I know it's not, you know, ancient history and sacred writings from, like, 3,000 years ago or longer. But still, you know, you've got all these ideas. And, you know, you've got dreams and race memories and, I don't know, meditational astral projections and all that stuff. And, yeah, you start to think, oh, maybe all of it's related somehow. Maybe if it's not, maybe it's all bullshit. But
the human condition, you know, really hasn't changed that much in millions of years. If we can imagine and conceive these ideas today, you know, why can't ancient people conceive imaginary beings in the past? You know, they were looking at nature. They were, you know, observing nature, animals, things would occur that they couldn't explain, you know, weather, things coming out of the sky, you know, it could have been comets, shooting stars. They might have witnessed, you know, changes in the stars that, you know, we will never be able to provide evidence of. They could have seen so many different things. There's no way to be certain that you know, what they saw, what they're trying to tell us is that, you know, some alien visitor came and therefore they worship them as a god.
That is very true, and you make an excellent point. That is very persuasive. However, if you'd shown someone from like 100 years ago, like some of our technology or even like basic computer that we have today, they would just be, you know, astounded, and they would probably, you know, if you could work it up correctly and if you had like the internet like we do today, back then 100 years ago, they would probably consider you some sort of, you know, god or in touch with the gods.
Sure.
They would probably attach some sort of religious significance. And if you showed someone like a 19th century crystal to someone from like, you know, 100 BC, you know, the same sort of reaction. It would like, you know, after a while bow down and worship you, and it would just be like this whole, you know, like, amazed. So, I don't know. So, I guess it would make sense if even though people are the same pretty much now as they were, like, 50,000 years ago.
Absolutely. And I think we would be amazed.
Something different. And they're going to be like, oh, my God, this is, like, crazy. And, you know, not just like, oh, my God, the Romans are building roads and they've got, like, awesome armor and spears.
Yeah, they even had plumbing. They had plumbing.
We speculate
the ancient Egyptians probably had electricity, too. I mean, look at all the artifacts they find. And then one of the pyramids, I can't remember which one, but it's got no hieroglyphics in it. and they did a test. There was no scorch marks in the entire pyramid to show that they used torches to light it. The mirror trick doesn't work because it's too deep in the cavern. But yet they had to illuminate it somehow. They had to illuminate it somehow, and they found these pots that they believe is a prehistoric battery, you know, an ancient battery. They found these other artifacts that they're like, hey, you know, it's possible that they had some kind of, you know, primitive electricity.
Right.
But we can't fathom that. We're like, what? How can they possibly have built the pyramids? How could they possibly have done half the crap they did?
Right. It does sound unbelievable, but maybe they had help with that too. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's not, it's believable, I think, given their primitive science, they could create, like, you know, a makeshift battery out of, you know, a gourd or a clay pot and, like, I don't know, fermented vegetable juice and, you know, some seeds or whatever they used.
I think it was like copper or something. I can't remember.
Yeah. There was some sort of metal involved.
The interior of the actual clay vessel was lined with copper, and then there was I believe, brass rod that went through the center of it, and when you applied vinegar to it, that's when it created an electrical charge.
Yeah, and they had a couple of scientists actually try to recreate these batteries, and they do illuminate. And the same thing with the light bulb. They took that one hieroglyph where it looks like some experts say it looks like he's holding the light bulb, and other experts say, no, it's a clay pot with a serpent in it. But they did. There's a YouTube video to look at it, and they actually created this light bulb out of what they would have had available to them back then, and it looks just like what's in the hieroglyphs, and it was a light bulb, and they actually recreated it. So it's a possibility that they had electricity.
Yeah, it is possible, and they're very smart. I've heard that the ancient Egyptians found a way to go around getting women pregnant, or some sort of, you know, morning after pill with basically like crocodile eggs. Like, you know, how did they come up with that? I guess they just experimented, or
yeah. Or look at the ancient Chinese. I mean, a lot of the innovations we have in medicine are attributed to the ancient Chinese.
Yeah, there's some stuff that they did back then that we can't even do now, probably.
Yeah, like, that's
that
what I mean. We'd be boggled. We would totally be boggled.
And that also begs the question, like, you know, did they have some sort of outside assistance? I mean, if they can do shit 2,000 years ago that we would have trouble doing now, like, did they really come up with all that on their own, or did they...
Well, consider, are you familiar with the Palermo mummies?
No.
Okay, you need to Google it when you get a chance. They went to Palermo, Italy, and then into this cavern, and they found a bunch of mummies. They're modern-day mummies, but the embalmer had perfected an embalming system so complex that there's this one particular little girl. Now, she's over a couple hundred years old, been mummified, but she looks like brand spanking new. And they cannot figure out for the life of them, and all the science innovation that we have and investigative tools we have, we cannot mimic, copy, recreate that mummification process today with all the innovation we have. And that was only done a couple hundred years ago.
Hmm.
So just because we can't explain how something is done doesn't mean man didn't do it.
It's aliens.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, okay, when you can't explain it, it's
right.
Like, oh, well, man couldn't do it because, you know, man's a bunch of, you know, hairless apes dragging knuckles around. You know, had to have ancient assistance from some alien that came. And then you have the modern-day alien visitations,
yeah.
And, you know, everybody's like, oh, aliens. And, you know, then you have the, you know, the imagery. You know, it seems to be the same, you know, like the grays, the phenomena of the grays. And then that was that new movie that came out where they come in through like dimensional visitations.
You're talking about the fourth kind of this?
Yeah.
There's the fourth kind, and then there's paranormal whatever.
Yeah, I think that was like the makeshift documentary that they did, but it was the other one where it's got what's her name in it? Pretty girl. Oh, can't remember her name. She's like investigating, it's in an Alaska town, and she's investigating why people are having all the same kind of symptoms, and it comes out that they were visited by aliens, but not like spaceship arriving and, you know, abducting people. They were doing it through some kind of like dimensional space.
That's
so people come up with these ideas. Are they true? Are they false? Are we making it up? Are we hysterical? Who knows?
Right. It does sound good. And it is, I guess it's a natural human leap to be like, oh, my God, I understand what that is. It must be aliens, or it must be the gods, or it must be
right.
Some supernatural angel that came down you know. So, yeah, that is kind of a human thing that just kind of like assume that, like, hey, I don't understand this, therefore it must be, you know, beyond, you know, the knowledge of human ken and, you know, crazy stuff. But
I will say,
people call in if they want. You always have the number, Beast. Why don't you tell people listening out there, you know.
Let's see, it's 347-989-1371. I'm sitting right in front of the switchboard, so if anybody wants to call in and, you know, tell us what you think about it, that would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
You know, one of the things that I'd like to point out, if we were to, I'm inclined to think if we were to accept that, you know, we had been visited, which, I mean, if you ask me, it's relatively egotistical to think that we're the most advanced living species in the entire universe, and that somebody didn't have the technology to visit us, I would think that they would come to us in a hostile state rather than a friendly state. Myself, I don't believe that they
would go either way. I mean, it depends on their motives, and it depends on, I guess, their own particular evolution or, you know, ideology. You know, it could be like B, where, you know, these reptile people are coming to take our land and our resources and basically eat us. Or it could be like...
Have you been watching the new B series, the recreation of the old series?
I have been, yes.
I'm wondering how that's going to...
Decent.
I think it would probably be a scenario like that. You know, if they did come, they've probably been here a while, observing us, learning, and
right.
Using what they learned against us, because it's easier to herd a bunch of sheep if they're docile.
Yeah,
you know,
especially
like,
if they have the ability to put, like, key members of their race in, like, positions of, you know, government and...
Yeah. Well, that's what David Icke's little conspiracy theory is with the children of the Matrix. Is, you know, we have the lizard people among us. They've been living among us for hundreds of years. They're part of our government. They're in every aspect of our lives.
Yeah, that's a nice theory, but
I think it's a little far fetched, but it's definitely interesting to explore.
It is. But the other kind of paradigm, I guess, if aliens visited us, or the other side of the coin would be. I don't know if anyone's ever seen the original, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yep.
I think the remake sucks ass. The original is awesome, and it's cool because there's this guy that looks just like us, but, you know, he's from a different planet, and he's got all this different technology, and he tries to, you know, bring worlds together and tries to let us know that he's got, like, a special message. For everyone, for all everyone concerning the world and, you know, our place in it and stuff like that. And he's kind of like a Jesus figure because he comes and he's, you know, trying to save the world, and he's persecuted at the same time because people just don't understand him. And I don't know. It's a great movie if you want to see the original, The Day the Earth Stood Still. It's pretty fantastic. It's got some cool, eerie... what's that instrument? Were they they have that in, like, early 50s science fiction movies. God, I can't think. But it's the weird, cool, like, eerie, spooky, creepy music. I can't remember that instrument, but
Are you talking about, like, the didgeridoo?
No. I don't know. It's not there.
It makes creepy. It makes pretty creepy sounds.
Yeah, it's like 50s science fiction movies that makes creepy sounds. I don't know. If only Anton LaVey was alive and on the phone, He would be able to tell me.
What are you talking about? He'd play it.
Yeah, he would. It's like an organ piano related thing.
Isn't it called a calliope or something?
No, close, but it's cool too because like you just move your hands around. You don't have to actually touch anything. You just move your hands, and it like somehow senses like what notes, and it's just like. Like, just weird stuff.
Can you do that again?
That was a bad rendition. I should find a YouTube thing. That sucks.
We got to save a sound bite of that.
Yeah, that was awful.
Eric,
never do that again. Okay. I'm looking it up on YouTube. You guys talk amongst yourselves.
Okay. All right, so, my thoughts here are that it's not such a far off, thought that maybe, we were at one point visited and, they came down and they were like, oh, look at all these dumb monkeys. We're not going to really interact with you guys too much. And we'll come back, in a few thousand years.
That's what Zachariah Sitchin posits, that they did come. They created us. They worked us as slaves. So they had some infighting. They had to go back to the office to go work it all out, which is probably like...
Oh, pyramid.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
And then they'll be back for us. What is it?
A theremin. That's what I'm thinking of.
I'm going to have to Google that. But, in 2012, Nibiru is going to come back into our orbit, and... all the big bad Anunnaki are going to come and snatch us up and bring us back to the home planet to work us as slaves or eat us as food.
That's interesting. So that meets him with the 2012 thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've been talking about that for years because Zachariah believes that the planet Nibiru only enters our orbit, I can't remember, so many 10,000 years or whatever. And so I subscribe to Scientific American magazine, and there's and Skeptical Inquiry magazine, and every now and then people write into NASA and say, look, all these conspiracy theorists are keep talking about this planet Nibiru. You guys should know if it's out there. Is it coming? Is it coming back into our orbit? And all the scientists keep saying, look, we have all this, really advanced equipment, and we would be able to detect if there was some planet that was going to be entering our orbit, especially by 2012, and they're all saying, no planet's coming. But all the 2012 conspiracy theorists are saying, oh, yep, it's definitely coming. So I guess we'll see, huh?
Absolutely. I think no matter what, 2012 is going to be an important year just because so many people have assigned, a relation to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm taking my son to go see that movie today, as a matter of fact.
Now, we should probably break away from our topic for just a minute and give you the opportunity to plug all the stuff that you're doing. So if you'd like to, you can plug your Poison Apple website and all that good stuff.
Oh, my Poison Apple website, where I put all my little crafties and madness. It's still just a hobby, I'm just making stuff all the time. I'm always in my studio. I'm making jewelry as I'm sitting right here while I'm talking to you guys. I'm always making something. So then I decided to, make a website so I can peddle some of this stuff because people buy it from me privately, so I might as well do a website. But if you want to visit my website, it is www.the-poison-apple.com.
Awesome. And it's definitely well worth the look for anybody out there that hasn't been there to visit it. I've been there a couple of times, and I always find something that I think is unique. Yesterday, actually, as I was re-researching you and everything for this show, because this was planned like a month ago, I came across your photo gallery. And went and looking through, and I came to realize something that I had noticed in that YouTube video I commented on, and that is that your house is very, very interestingly decorated.
Oh, yeah. call my house a museum. When they come into my house, even if they've been here 100 times, every time they come here, they're like, I never noticed that before. Where did that come from? And I'm like, that's been here for years. Really? Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I do interior design, but my place is a reflection of me. So, you know, I would never decorate another person's house like mine. But I paint, I do everything. I'm a jack of all trades, so I'm always making something.
I thought that was really cool, and then, you know, it's something. So, you know, it's worth a look, if anything, for people just to go check out the artsiness of everything that you do, the altars that you build, the jewelry that you do.
Yeah, I paint a little. I make dolls. I do a little bit of everything. But to see really the full arena of my photos, you got to go to my Slide account.
And there's a massive amount.
Yeah, if you go to slide.com, my account's City of Sin, and I have a plethora of slideshows of all the things I've made and things I'm working on. Because I do process photos, too. Like, look at this painting I'm working on. Look, I'm almost done with it. Look, I've been working on this thing for 6 months, and it's still not done yet.
Right.
And I share my artwork on the forum, too, so there's some stuff on the forum.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. If anyone wants to go to the Cult of Cthulhu forum, our discussion board's on there. You can find it easily. Just go to cultofcthulhu.net. And, log on and register, and there's lots of people posting their artwork. Horasan, myself, Matt Gruden, and the Beast, and tons of other people. So
yeah.
I try to post up on my website as much Cthulhu Beast as I can.
One of the things that I actually read on Wiki was that there, in 1994, there was a magazine that, and they were pretty much breaking down everything that Van Daniken had, put up as his hypothesis. And they actually were claiming that he was heavily plagiarizing the Cthulhu mythos.
Yeah, I've heard that theory myself. I've heard that myself. Because they speculate where Lovecraft himself drew a lot of his ideas. And
right.
That's how I got the link to Daniken's theories, too. I was just like, oh, check that out. You know, no matter where you go, you're gonna find Lovecraft has touched a little bit of everything everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, his influence is pretty awesome, in the old sense of the word, awe-inspiring. Yeah, I've heard that too. In fact, there's a book that I have. Maybe I can go to my bookshelf and find it quick. But it links up Lovecraft and the mythos with Daniken and the Chariots of the Gods phenomenon. And it was pretty good. It wasn't a great, fantastic read. Oh, here it is. Okay, it's called The Cult of Alien Gods, H.P. Lovecraft, and Extraterrestrial Pop Culture. By Jason Colavito. And, it's a big book. It's like almost 400 pages. It talks about like flying saucers, the lost civilizations, and explores the decline of reason and the dramatic challenges of rock science over the past century. And Lovecraft created the first ancient astronaut story in 1926, and the saga of how his fictional aliens, his sheer fun, became a powerful threat to mainstream science, rivals the ancient astronaut theory itself for sheer outrageous improbability. I think this guy's spin is, he's a fan of Lovecraft, and he really liked those ideas of like ancient astronaut, Chariots of the Gods stuff, but then as he got older, he became more skeptical, was more jaded and cynical, and is now kind of further debunking that kind of stuff and thinks it's mostly a load of crap. But he still touches on some cool stuff, and it's a decent book. Lovecraft's, maybe Daniken got a lot of stuff from Lovecraft. Lovecraft, was a voracious reader, and anything science-related, even if it was, just speculation and not backed up by anything, like objective fact, he probably included a lot of that stuff in his stories. So, yeah. Hey, you guys want to hear a clip from the day that Earth stood still with Saruman and stuff going on? I got it queued up here.
Awesome. Go for it.
Okay.
I came here to give you these facts. But if you threaten to extend your violence, this earth of yours will be reduced to a burnt-out cinder.
Okay, that's enough of that. Could you hear that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was from the original Day the Earth Stood Still, and yeah, it's a really terrific movie.
Real quick, Venger, we actually have another guest on the line.
Okay.
Zazzle has mic'd in.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, a little bit.
Hello?
You can speak up, though.
Hello?
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yes.
If you've got your speakers on, turn them down.
Right.
Alright, that'll make it better and a little easier for us to hear you.
Turn your radio down, your speakers on your computer, and then turn them down, because otherwise it's just going to be a big echoey mess.
I'm just using my laptop.
Oh, okay. Cool. Do you have any insight or anything to add to the discussion here?
No, I was just piping in just to say hello. Cthulhu, Cult of Cthulhu Network, so I've just been signing up to all the different, your blogs and the forums and...
Okay.
Because I find a lot of what you say actually resonates with my own views and thoughts anyway.
Cool. Where are you from?
I've been studying the occult now for about 14 years.
Wow.
But when I read LaVey's The Satanic Bible, that's what got me into Satanism. I just speak about common sense anyway. And then from there, I've just, using that as a foundation, just expanded on that, you know, to adapt things to suit myself, you know. Just find using also chaos magic, because I'm a solitary practitioner, I don't need to rely too much on like rituals and that, you know.
Uh-huh. Where are you from? Like Scotland or something?
Scotland.
Okay. No, I'm
in the north of Scotland.
What's that?
Why you can't hear me too well.
Okay. Thanks for calling in and telling us that. Anton LaVey, of course, is a huge inspiration on me too, and you know, yeah, a lot of common sense there. And
I'm just trying now to incorporate the Cthulhu mythos, because obviously when I've read a lot on chaos magic, and obviously you're able there from what, obviously going by what Peter Carroll and Phil Hines are saying, you know, you can adopt so many traditions. I mean, obviously you still got to respect those traditions, but so sort of taking that cue, I'm just trying now to work in the Cthulhu mythos into my own philosophy and cosmic view, if you like.
Yeah, definitely. That's the whole chaos magic approach is, you know, you can bring anything into it and create your own paradigm from basically nothing or pop culture and, you know, create a belief system and, you know, that makes it real, and you create your own reality, and then you're off and away and doing whatever, and doesn't need to have a lot of objective consistency, or you know, standing next to you doesn't need to believe it, and you're it to be part of your belief or it to be real for you.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
I'm gonna go off now.
Because
I was just testing a few things out, and what I need to do is get my headset rigged up so I can speak that way. It's a lot easier.
It would be, sir, yes.
Aye.
But we can still hear
anyway.
you, so it's cool.
Okay. It's just I can't hear you very well. It's just to do with the volume on the laptop.
Oh, yeah.
And he can't hear us if he turns the volume all the way down.
Oh, I see.
So...
Yeah, I guess we can
see
that.
I'll just carry on listening then, and I'll get better organized next time.
Awesome.
Okay, well,
we'll be here for me in the future.
We definitely appreciate the call.
Just put myself on the map, so to speak.
Yeah. Good.
Okay, then, thank you.
All right, sorry. We're gonna have to go ahead and mute you, my friend.
That's okay.
Because it's kind of mind-boggling trying to actually follow our own thought patterns, and as we're hearing
aliens.
Ourselves speak back at
aliens.
But thanks for calling in, man.
That's all right.
All right. We're starting.
Blame that on the laptop. I think it's the work of extraterrestrials that are influencing the show here.
It certainly could be.
Nah,
you know,
gremlin.
Well,
yeah, gremlins too. All related.
While we've been having this conversation, I've been pondering something, and it seems to make sense to me. Even if we have, you know, never actually been visited by an alien species, even if there are no aliens living amongst us and all of this is, you know, just exactly what it is, it's science fiction fantasy, it still poses the thought that we as a species have forever been locked into this miserable reality. And it's, you know, it's a way for us to try to escape. It's a way to cope and try to move beyond the confines of our mundane everyday lives.
Mm-hmm. I'll agree. Well, and that's why, you know, we have the ability for imagination in the first place. You know, it's kind of built into our code so we don't die of boredom.
Right. Yeah.
It just kind of occurred to me, and I mean, it's evident that, you know, our generation isn't the first and only generation to think of themselves as being, you know, just kind of confined to this every day.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, imagine life before television, radio, the internet. God, I can't even imagine what people did all day, every day. You know, once all the work was done, once all the, you know, the essential stuff was done, what the hell did people do to entertain themselves? They told stories.
Well, they told stories.
Yeah, they beat their kids, and they had sex, and then, I don't know, they went to Little Italy, and they robbed some trucks, and I don't know, I'm thinking of, like, The Godfather Part 2. Yeah, I don't know what people did without TV and without the internet and all this other stuff. I have no idea. I guess they told stories.
Sure they did. They even left some of those stories behind.
Yeah, well, they just went to the mulch shop a lot. I have no idea.
Well, I would say no matter what they did, it was probably always at least somewhat productive in entertainment value. So,
well, it's definitely an interesting thing to explore, you know, especially in lieu of the mythos that there are interdimensional beings that kind of pop in and pop out. visit us, torment us, make us go crazy.
Yeah. That could be. Well, we're kind of getting into the undiluted truth portion of the show where we kind of break away from the main topic and we just talk about whatever the hell we want.
So, excellent. Actually, we're right inside of that.
Find ourselves to Curious of the Gods. Talk about whatever.
Well, before we actually get into that, let's run a set of commercials because I've really gotten out of this habit.
Okay.
And then after that, I'd like to talk about a couple of things that, are up and coming. So, here's the commercials.
The Ooze is brought to you by the following. CultofCthulhu.net. Awaken with the Cult of Cthulhu. CreativeOddityStudios.com. Making art a dirty word since 1998. Lulu.com/Satanus. Purchase publishings by Avenger Satanus. Artist, author, cult visionary. Find titles such as Cthulhu Cult, Libre AO, and the role-playing game Empire of Satanus. Lulu.com/CreativeOddities. Find publishings written by Jason Terrell, artist, author, such as The Tattoo Apprentice, The Baphomet Codex, and The Devil's Due. FearTheBeast.com. Let the madness begin. Catch the dollars. A Vigilant of Vision. YouTube.com/iFreeSatanus. Now back to our program.
All right. Coming back into this. I wanted to make mention so listeners know next week we've got Jason Sorrell back on the air. We're going to delve a little deeper into the fourth way and take a look at that. That should be really cool.
That should be a good show.
It's actually interesting that Jason, in preparation for the show coming up on the main page of his website, encouraged his web visitors to check out your Lulu store and take a read at some of the materials that you've written. So I thought it might be a good idea if we could make a few other suggestions for things that people might be able to read so that they can come to us next week with a little more to say than hi, I'm calling in to say hello.
Yeah, okay.
They can read our newsletter.
We do
put out a newsletter.
Yeah, we do. The Green Trapezoid, and Coruscant is in charge of that. She's like the editor.
I need content, though. Like, people could write in with whatever, send it to me.
Yeah, we love people's, not only their feedback, but, artwork and stories and essays on things and their own thoughts.
Picking apart the theology or the mythos. That's interesting.
Yeah. We use that for the Trapezoid newsletter and, people just post things on the forum too. I've got that new blog/video and image gallery website that, that used Zeno created just a week ago or a week or two ago. That is www.cthulhu-cult.com. I don't know if I want to call it a dash or a hyphen, but anyway, it's that. There's a lot of cool stuff there, but it's cool when people can, give us material and tell us what they're thinking or if they create something, there's somewhat of an audience for it built in because, if we publicize it or if you post it on the forum or something like that or in the newsletter, then, a lot of people are going to see it every day. So that's always cool.
Right. Actually, one of the things that I was going to discuss that's up and coming, the new website, the Cthulhu-Cult.com, is going to soon give the user the ability to actually upload their own artwork to a particular image gallery along with the ability for people to tell us about their dreams. We're going to create a special section where people can actually post their dreams up. We're interested in hearing any kind of weird language that may have come from an entranced state or a dream state. You know, if you can type out what it sounded like and enter it into there, we're going to try to put some kind of feature together for that. We'd also, we're looking for uncommon books that are heavily referenced on the Cthulhu mythos as well. Or, you know, maybe short stories that are never really made it big but have the same, ideology as a basis. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really cool. We intend to make the Cthulhu-cult.com website really interactive and user-friendly.
Right. So. Yeah, I'm going to try to be posting on there different blog posts, like, hopefully a couple times a week with some new material and, whatever comes to my mind or parts of the cult theology or, just sort of practical magical stuff.
Also, while I'm thinking about this, one of the things that I'd like to actually see happen is people submit pictures of masks that they've made. I think that would be really cool if we had a gallery of different masks and what they were intended to represent. Mm-hmm. Which I'm guessing that Coruscant would probably be able to submit a couple hundred of them.
Yeah, actually I just did a mask making workshop a couple weeks ago at a retreat. Showing people how to make masks from, scratch. Because some people, they don't even know where to start. Would they go out and get a blank template and just paint it? Or, I think if you make it from scratch, it even makes it even more unique to the person.
Right. What kind of materials do you use when you make something like that from scratch?
For the workshop, because we were limited on time, I just used foam, foam board. But you can actually do vegetable-treated leather. And make a leather mask, which is really, really cool. And it's not as hard as most people think it is. You basically just soak it, and then once you get the form, you use a hair dryer, and once you dry it with the heat, it stays wherever you pinch it or form it, and so you can really get creative with them.
Oh,
add tentacles and all kinds of creepy stuff.
Yeah. So where would you get the leather to start with, the vegetable?
I found that the most reliable source to get it cheap is eBay. There's a lot of dealers on eBay that'll just sell it in bulk. But there are some leather dealers. You'll mostly get them from Native American peddlers. But eBay's cheap. You can just find a big lot of it for under $100, and then you can get at least a dozen masks out of it.
Wow. So it's malleable when you get it.
It's kind of stiff when you get it, but the key is soaking it. You basically soak it in some warm water and get it all nice and soft, and then you cut it, to your face, and, you form it around your face. Do you want it to have a nose? Do you want it to go over your cheekbones? And then once you get it to where you want it, you basically just sit there with a hair dryer and just pinch it or, fold it or however you want to mold it, and then hit it with a hair dryer until it's dry, and it stays like that. And it's permanent, and then you can paint it, add stuff to it, embellish it with whatever you want.
Wow, yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, if I can get my webcam working, I was gonna do a YouTube, kind of a quick here, come ask.
Yeah. I should find out if the guy that made my Yog Sothoth mask, John Cherifka, I know from MySpace, he's also working on a tentacle. For me, that I could put over my hand, but basically I have tentacle arm hand thing.
That'd be cool.
But yeah, he used leather for my mask, so I should ask him if he can elaborate on the process, so other people could do that too. Because I love my mask. I know it is made at least partially from leather. It's pretty fantastic, and if people can make that kind of stuff on their own, that would be
awesome. Oh yeah. Because I think when people go out and get the templates, no matter how they paint it, it's pretty much all the same mask.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what I've actually done is in the past I've taken an egg carton, or a milk carton, I'm sorry, and cut it in half and then paper mache'd over the top of it.
Oh, yeah, you could do paper mache. I'm actually working on a life mask where I'm going to use plaster. And that stuff, you can get it from any craft store. The only thing that I don't like about it is you need two people to do it, and you can't be claustrophobic. Because the only thing you're breathing out of is two straws up your nose.
Wow.
But once it sets and you fill it with plaster, I mean, you have an exact replica of your own face. And then you can use latex, you can use plaster, you can use epoxy, all kinds of things, and really make a really crazy-looking mask.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Wow, awesome. Well, we got about 4 minutes left in the show, and so I guess it's time for us to actually start saying our thank yous. Kuro-san, we really appreciate you coming out to join us for this show. I knew this would be the perfect topic for you. So I'm happy you came on.
It's been great having you on, very cool.
We'd like to see you again, so if you have any ideas of things that you think we might need to cover and you'd like to cover it with us, let us know.
Yeah, anytime. Just let me know. As long as I have enough notice in advance, I can schedule it. And it's no problem.
Cool.
Thanks for having me on.
Cool. Oh, yeah. You're definitely welcome. Yeah. It made the show that much better.
Cool.
Absolutely. Benzer, of course, I got to say my thank you to you, because without you, this whole deal wouldn't have ever manifested. So.
You're quite welcome.
I want to thank Jason Sorrell ahead of time, because I'm sure he's going to bring us an amazing show next week.
That should be pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Other than that, I'm out of thank yous, so it's your turn, man.
I want to thank Kuro-san too, and you, B-Zeno, and the guy from Scotland that called in. That was cool to hear from him. The guy the people that generally give us feedback, either on the forum or my YouTube channel, which is High Priest Satanist. You can find me there. I got all these videos. The latest video I have up is one where I'm looking for my High Priestess, my Emerald Woman. So you can watch that video if you want. The date I had last night was actually because of that video. So that was kind of interesting. Because I put that up on my Facebook thing. It's just a little like, hey, I made this video. And then this girl got back to me that I'd seen before. Stuff like that. I'll probably make a new video next couple days. So people should check that out. That's going to be more cult mythos related. And, yeah, just thank our listeners for tuning in and the people that download the archived episodes each week. We appreciate that. And everybody's support. I guess that's it.
All right. On that note, we'll talk to everybody next week.
Thank you for listening to the news. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily reflect those held by Venture or Beast or any institution associated with us. The news does not condone any illegal or unethical acts. If you have been offended during the production of the show, we're sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Thank you, and see you next week.